Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Peter King Podcast, a very busy news week. I think you're going to like my guest this week. My first conversation is with the player who caught America's imagination on Sunday, playing quarterback for the Denver Broncos when 24 hours before the game, he had absolutely no idea that he would even be in the game. And that is Kendall Hinton. The quarterback of the Denver Broncos, probably for the last time in his life, but he certainly was for one memorable day in a 31-3 loss to the New Orleans Saints. And then we'll also talk to Raheem Morris, who has the Atlanta Falcons on quite a hot streak since they started 0-5. They've only lost two games since, and Raheem Morris is getting a lot of credit for calming the waters in Atlanta, getting him to focus on football, getting him to play some ferocious defense, which was really evident in their massacre of the Las Vegas Raiders on Sunday. So we'll have Hinton and we will have Morris in just a moment. But first, you know, a lot of people in the last few days have said to me, so it's absurd that these games are being played. Isn't it ridiculous that the Denver Broncos played when all four quarterbacks they have under contract in the organization were either COVID positive in the case of one quarterback, Jeff Driskel, and then the other three were close contacts with Driskel? And so isn't it ridiculous they should play? Isn't it ridiculous that the Baltimore Ravens should play? I mean, as I record this podcast now, the Ravens are in the air on the way to Pittsburgh to play, obviously, Eastern time, 3:40 p.m. on Wednesday. And isn't it absurd they are playing with approximately 23 player positives in the last 9 days? And yes, it is absurd. It's absurd that Denver should play, and it's absurd that Baltimore should play. However, just because it's absurd, it doesn't mean it is a dumb idea. And I'll tell you why. Because what has happened this year, this calendar year, in the National Football League, Roger Goodell basically said, hey, listen, what we are going to do is we're going to get free agency to go on as scheduled, even though this pandemic has just started. It went on, life went on. The draft, we're not postponing the draft. It's going to go on, and it went on as scheduled, even though it was done virtually. And I think the league office at that point basically got emboldened. And the league office said about this season, their thought about this season basically has been, there's no sign, no assurance whatsoever that the pandemic is going to get any better. In fact, it's probably going to get worse. And I would agree that between now and the first week of February, when the Super Bowl is going to happen, other than the fact that some emergency workers, some emergency medical workers and essential workers are going to get a vaccine, the vast majority of Americans will not have been vaccinated by early February. If you want this season to happen, you got to play the games. And everybody says, and I understand why everybody says, just move the games to week 18. Have an extra regular season week. understandable, and it still may happen. But if you elongate the season by a week, does that lessen the possibility that you are going to be able to, you know, complete this season as you thought it would? Or, I mean, what does it do to the completion of the season? And I think what it does is it makes it harder and harder to play 256 regular season games and the playoffs without having a major disruption in the course of the season. So as much as it sounds like kind of circular logic, and you know, you're justifying a bad thing with another bad thing, you're justifying playing these games by saying, in essence, well, you don't want to make the season go later. I think that's a very good reason. You don't want to push this season back and back and back, because what's going to happen? Do you think the pandemic is going away? I don't. And that's why, as painful as watching some of these games is, I think the game should be played if at all possible that they can be played. So, hey, listen, if you disagree with me, please disagree. And I'll use some of your letters and emails in my column. Write to me, peterkingfmia@gmail.com. Just tell me, make a comment right on this, you know, on this site with, you know, with this podcast. You can comment and you can tell me I'm full of beans or whatever. But it's something that I just feel pretty strongly about, as you can tell. So let's get to our first guest. You know, Kendall Hinton was just minding his own business until the phone rang late Saturday afternoon in his apartment in Denver. And it was his position coach with some incredible news. And he's going to tell you about that incredible news when I chat with him right here after a moment. And just keep one thing in mind when you listen to Kendall Hinton. He's not basically used to the world of the soundbite. You know, he's not a many time interviewed person. And so, you know, not in any way to be critical of how he was when I talked to him, but I think all of this attention with Kendall Hinton is really blowing him away, which you'll be able to tell when you listen to him. So now here's my conversation with Kendall Hinton. Back on the podcast, happy to be joined by Kendall Hinton of the Denver Broncos. You know, I hesitate to say wide receiver of the Denver Broncos or quarterback of the Denver Broncos, because I'm really not sure what he is right now at this moment. But I suppose you go back to being a wide receiver. Kendall, you've had quite a last few days. How are you?
Doing well, Peter. Yeah, the weekend has definitely been hectic, but, you know, kind of settling down and really absorbing, you know, all the things that's happened and, you know, reaching out to all the people that supported me.
So if we can, as I said when I, in the introduction of the podcast, this is really one of the craziest stories that I remember in all my years covering football. And I guess it's logical to think that crazy stories are going to happen when a pandemic is sort of wreaking havoc on football. But I just want to go back and tell a little bit about your story and where you came from. Okay, so you went to Wake Forest, and you went to Wake Forest. You enrolled in Wake Forest as a quarterback, correct?
Right.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your high school career and what caused you to go to Wake Forest.
Right. So, you know, I went to high school in Durham, North Carolina. You know, we had successful, you know, junior senior year. We won a state championship. Had a pretty good season at quarterback, both that junior and senior year, and got offers from ACC schools around the area, Duke, NC State, Wake Forest, and it pretty much came down between those three. And, you know, Wake Forest offered, you know, a great academic opportunity and, you know, also being able to play Power Five football. And Duke was actually in my hometown, so kind of wanted to get away, and Wake Forest is the best option.
So what was your quarterback career like at Wake Forest? You played for a while, and then they shifted you to wide receiver. Tell me what happened there.
Yeah. My experience at Wake Forest was kind of crazy. So I came in my freshman year and kind of competed with John Walford, who's actually with the Rams now. And, you know, we competed my freshman year, and, you know, John ended up getting the reins, and, you know, beginning of the season, they gave me a shot. John got hurt, and, you know, I did pretty well. And for the rest of the season, we kind of went back and forth. And going to my sophomore year, I was, you know, I got the start week two, ended up getting injured, and that set me out for that year. And coming back, you know, I had some issues at quarterback, just with confidence and my mojo. And, you know, they asked me to look at some different positions, and receiver was one of them. And I had some success, you know, at receiver. And so we did that throughout training camp, my red shirt junior year, and we had some injuries at quarterback that season. So I had to kind of play back, both positions, and never got to really focus on either one. So that was kind of up and down year for me as well. And then coming to my senior year, actually, you know, it was the first time I got to focus on the receiver position and you know, put all my energy there. And it turned out to be a great season for me.
So your senior year in 2019 at Wake Forest, 73 catches, 1,001 yards, 4 touchdowns. You also returned punts and kickoffs as well. Did you feel like if you went to the NFL and had a shot at the NFL, it was definitely going to be at the receiver position?
Oh, yeah, no question. No question.
And tell me about after your year last year at Wake Forest, what happened? What was the pre-draft situation for you like, and did you talk to a lot of teams?
Yeah, so, you know, coming out of that my senior year, coming off a 1,000-yard receiving season, I was feeling pretty good about, you know, coming to the draft. I knew I was, you know, early at the position, and not a lot of people knew about me, but, you know, I was confident in my abilities and, you know, excited to show what I could do for pro day. And, you know, just with the year we've had, 2020, and, you know, COVID season, has been, you know, a crazy year for everybody. And so our pro day ended up getting canceled. So I really wasn't able to show, you know, what I could do, and, you know, wasn't able to get my name out there. So it definitely hurt me. It definitely hurt a lot of guys. Some guys didn't even get that opportunity. You know, so come draft day, you know, I was hoping to hear my name called day three, and, you know, it went by, and the Broncos give me a call, you know, a few minutes after the draft. And, you know, even though they drafted three receivers, they, you know, they told me, hey, we're going to bring you up here as an undrafted guy and, you know, give you a shot during training camp. And, you know, I just took it and ran with it.
Okay, so you go to training camp, you come down to the final cut, you don't make, you know, you don't make the team. And I wonder what happened after that. Did you go on the practice squad right away, or was there a time between you got cut and you were brought back to the practice squad?
Right. So, yeah, the final day of training camp, you know, they made final cuts and I didn't make it. So I was waived, and, you know, hoping to hear back from a team, and no luck there. So I headed back home. I stayed out in Georgia for a bit, and I was back in Durham for a bit, you know, here just trying to stay in shape, hoping to get a call back. And, you know, but also, you know, taking real life into consideration, you know, looking for opportunities in the corporate world and, you know, in different avenues.
So I found something on a LinkedIn page that you were basically into, you were called a fundraising coach at Vertical Rays in Durham. Right. And it said, and describing yourself, it says, current NFL free agent looking to kickstart a career in the medical sales industry where I can learn, grow, and develop both personally and professionally. So basically, it seemed like if this is what your fate was, you were ready to move on with your life.
Yeah, you know, football, it's always been a passion. It's always been a dream. And I was so grateful for the opportunity that the Broncos gave me just to, you know, come in and give it a shot. When I got waived, didn't get a call and, you know, didn't have any money in my pocket and had to, you know, kind of figure out what I was going to do. And, you know, Wake Forest gave me the opportunity with that, the degree that I had. And I was pretty much started to think about real life.
So tell me when the Broncos called you and what they said when they called you back.
Yeah, so this was about 2 weeks after I had started with Vertical Rays. And yeah, I actually moved in with my sister into a new home and, you know, getting settled in there and getting ready to start this new job. And I'm walking through Lowe's going to get some stuff for a new room. And my agent calls me and he says, hey, like, you know, you got some cold gear. And I'm like, no, but it's no issue to go get some. And he says, the Broncos want you back. You're going to need to hop on a plane tomorrow afternoon and they'll have you back there and, you know, back for practice squad.
Wow. Were you, what thought goes through your mind when you're walking through Lowe's and your agent calls and says you're going to the NFL?
Right. I just wanted to, you know, drop everything I was doing and run out the building. It was, you know, it was amazing to hear because for me, I honestly thought it was, you know, that was the end of my career. And, you know, it was just to get another chance. It took a while to kind of sink in.
So you get back to Denver. This was about a month ago, right? I think it was in week 9. You get back to Denver and you're just sort of, you know, continuing to do what you did in training camp, you know, learning everything about the receiver position there.
Yeah. So, I get back here and it's, you know, we had about four or five weeks during training camp that to learn the offense. And so I'm getting back here and it's still, you know, fairly new. So I'm still trying to learn everything that I can and as well as not to rust off, and get back into the groove of things. It has been starting from new, but it's, you know, definitely getting back here and learning a lot of things that, you know, I forgot.
Last Saturday, do practice squad players go through, you know, the sort of Saturday walkthrough? Are you guys a part of that?
Yeah, so on Saturday, we'll actually serve our offense. So we'll play you know, I'm usually playing cornerback for our offense on Saturdays. And that Saturday walkthrough at around 12, I was, you know, I was just a cornerback, you know, guarding our receivers and giving a look. And 4 o'clock the afternoon, you know, I was told I was going to be quarterback.
Yeah. So are you shutting down Jerry Jeudy every time you do that in practice?
Yeah, I do what I can with those guys.
So what happened on Saturday? Tell me everything that happened when sort of late afternoon, everything starts to change. Did you first hear that all of your quarterbacks might be inactive because of COVID?
Yeah. So we had, we're at walkthrough and, you know, we see that all the guys are pulled out of walkthrough. And so it's still, we aren't quite sure what the situation is. And after practice, you know, our coach tells us what happened and, you know, what can be at stake. And so we're just kind of hoping for the best. And later that afternoon, it was, you know, people hit me up like, hey, you know, be ready or, you know, whatever it is. But it was all kind of jokingly, until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
But even when Vic Fangio is telling the team that these guys aren't going to play, are you thinking at all, hey, I might play quarterback tomorrow?
No shot. And, Yeah, a couple guys had joked about it, and it's funny. My coach actually asked me, "When's the last time you threw earlier that week?" But I had no idea, that something like this can happen, and so it was a huge surprise when I got that call.
When's the first moment you got an indication you might be playing?
Yeah, I had no clue until I actually, got that call later that afternoon.
Who called you?
My position coach, Coach Zach Zani.
And what exactly did he say?
He said, "Hey, buddy, get ready. You're suiting up for quarterback tomorrow. We're going to need you back in the facility so we can learn as much as we can tonight. And get ready to go play."
You went back to the facility, and tell me who was there. Was it Coach Pat Shermer, Mike Shula? I mean, who is there to work with you that evening?
Yeah, so I walk up the stairs, and it's pretty much every offensive, coach and quality control guy up there, and they're all waiting for me, and so that's pretty stressful. You walk up there, and you see all the stress on the guy's face, and I talk to Coach Shermer, and he kind of gives me an overview of what we're gonna do, and I go hook up with Coach Shula, and we kind of grind out some of the details and try to get the game plan down as best we could.
So, what exactly does Pat Shermer say that, I'm sure he's trying to make it seem very normal, but, hey, 12 hours ago, you were just a guy who was going to watch this game just like everybody else, and now
Right.
you're going to be playing quarterback against the number three defense in football. So,
Right.
what's he say to you at that moment?
Yeah, so everybody understood the situation. They understood how long it's been since I've been behind the center, and so they were just encouraging. They wanted to make sure I was, comfortable with the game plan, and they just told me to go out there, have fun, and do the best I could.
And how long were you there on Saturday evening, sort of learning from Mike Shula?
Yeah, so I got there around 6. We ran through as much as we could on paper, and we walked through some things before our entire offense got there, and we were able to do a short walkthrough, and we kind of stayed after a little bit and walked through some things, so give and take about 2 hours.
Can you tell me, after not having played quarterback for a while, I even wonder about the center snap. Are you going to be entirely in shotgun so they don't even work on the center snap, or how exactly? Let's just talk about something so basic like the center snap.
Yeah, and it's funny, most people who've never played the position, don't understand all that goes into a QB center exchange. That's something that you overlook and you don't really look to, but guys are practicing that every day at practice. That's not something we want to just jump into without being able to get any practice, and shotgun was the best option for us.
What else would you say, is your mind really racing on Saturday night when you're thinking about this? Are you pretty calm? What exactly is going through your mind?
Yeah, it's at the moment I got the call, yeah, my mind was racing. It was a crazy moment. Got the walkthroughs and saw how encouraging the guys were, and saw how all of them had my back, and that definitely helped out going into trying to sleep that night and going into Sunday. Nurse was there. It was still gonna be my first NFL game, and prime time Sunday, but it definitely calmed me out to know that the guys had my back.
If you can, take me into, let's say, one of the veterans, say a Von Miller or somebody, Justin Simmons, before the game or Saturday night. Tell me something that somebody said to you that you think is particularly memorable?
Yeah, you know, Greg Bowles, he came to me.
It's your left tackle.
Left tackle and Dalton Risner as well. You know, those guys stayed in my ear, especially, you know, heading to the stadium Sunday morning. You know, like, hey, you know, no matter what happens, we got your back. You know, we're going to do all we can to protect you. And, you know, that just makes me want to fight and do all I can for those guys as well. You know, and they stayed in my ear all day and encouraged me and kept me uplifted.
On Sunday morning, you actually did sort of, I take it you continued a bit of the walkthrough deal right in a little press conference room next to the locker room, I guess with coaches Shula and Shermer. Tell me what that was like in the morning right before the game.
Well, yeah, we couldn't really do much. So we just, you know, kind of ran over things, tried to work on, you know, my huddle presence, how I'm going to talk to the guys in the huddle, and, you know, working on some footwork kind of things for the handoffs and, yeah, as much as we could. And
it's interesting. You talk about the huddle presence. What was their advice about that?
Yeah. You know, enunciate, you know, make sure you're loud, and you just got to speak with confidence. You can't go in the huddle, you know, whispering to these other guys, and, you know, there's no confidence in the offense. So you just got to bring that.
When you jogged out for warmups before the game, did it hit you at all that this is one of the craziest things you could ever imagine?
Yeah, I honestly can't say it hit me until, you know, after the game and the next day, until I really got to absorb the moment. It was seriously just unreal. Sunday, you know, running out on the field, you know, warming up, running through the tunnel. It was surreal. It didn't even feel real. So it was tough to really absorb the moment until days later.
Yeah. When you go in the game, I wonder, your emotions stepping into the huddle. I know that on the first couple of snaps, Philip Lindsay took direct snaps, and then you came in, I think, the last play of this series. What do you remember when you stepped into the huddle for the first time?
Yeah, I remember Coach calling the play, and I remember, you know, my left arm just shaking as I try to, you know, try to read these tiny words on the wristband, and, you know, I'm trying to look calm as I can out there, but, you know, the nerves are taking over, and I'm just, you know, trying to be the best quarterback I can be, and, you know, show the guys that how confident I'm gonna be back there, but definitely jittery for sure.
Your first snap, you threw an incompletion, and I think it was Cam Jordan who was kind of coming in as a heavy rush. And this was the other thing. You're playing the number three defense in football. There's Cam Jordan. There's DeMario Davis. There's Malcolm Jenkins. There's Lattimore. This is a really, really good NFL defense. And I wonder, did it hit you when you were looking across the line of scrimmage? Man, most of these guys have been in the Pro Bowl.
You know, that's not something I really thought about, you know, during the game. It was back to football. You definitely notice the size of these guys, you notice the speed, and you notice the difference in the game speed overall. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was still football, and, you know, you just kind of get tunnel vision when you're out there, and you don't really notice those sort of things until after the moment.
On your third series, on your third series, you scrambled around right end on a third and nine, a little bit late in the first quarter. You got 5 yards, you get tackled by Quan Alexander. And, you know, I wonder, do you recall that play? And do you recall thinking, was it a designed run? Or did you just not find somebody open?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't a design run. It was a drop back pass. And, you know, for anybody who's never played a position, sitting in the pocket is one of those, you know, hardest things to do in football. And, know, especially for someone who hasn't experienced it. Trying to work the pocket was tough. So, you know, I was just trying to get out the pocket and use my legs. And, it's funny. I actually went over to the sideline after that play and told the guys, like, you know, I never seen somebody close that fast, especially that size. And, that was my first time I got tackled in I guess, two, three years. Yeah.
Did getting tackled feel kind of good to you? Did it make you at all feel like, hey, man, I'm in a football game now?
Oh, yeah. It brought back the, you know, the reality that, hey, this is just football. You know, it's you run the ball and guys are going to tackle you. It actually felt great to, you know, take a lick and kind of relax my nerves.
What was halftime like? What was Coach Shula and Pat Shurmur saying to you?
You know, just keep fighting. You know, stay at it, keep competing, and continue to do the best you can. You know, just wanted to take care of the ball and try to minimize, you know, the situation as best we could. And, you know, that was pretty much the message at halftime. Just keep fighting.
Oh, I thought it was really interesting. Your first pass of the third quarter was your completion. You sort of rolled right and threw back to the left to Noah Fant for a 13-yard gain. What did that mean to you, and what do you remember about that play?
Yeah, I remember seeing Noah catch it. It was honestly a bad ball, but I remember seeing Noah catch it, and, you know, just the relief, just knowing that I just completed a pass in the NFL. You know, and it kind of hit me in that moment, but, you know, it was on to the next play. But, you know, that was super exciting to experience and, you know, just to see that dream come true.
Yeah. So the game ends and you're on the field, and I wonder, did any of the Saints say anything to you after the game?
Yeah, I, you know, unfortunately I didn't get to, you know, see Drew Brees, because, you know, that was always an idol growing up, but it was great to see Taysom Hill. He, you know, he had a few words for me, you know, keep my head up, and, you know, he understood the situation I was in, and, you know, he had some great things to say, and, you know, I kind of just set it out after that.
I thought it was really interesting, you know, on Twitter after the game, there's a lot of people, a lot of NFL people, including DeMario Davis, you know, the all-pro linebacker, basically saying, hey, stay off my guy Kendall here. I mean, who could ever have done this in this situation? You were really getting a lot of support from people who 24 hours earlier had never really heard of you. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I actually got to see, you know, a message Kurt Warner had, you know, which is crazy because it's, you know, it's Kurt Warner. And yeah, that, you know, that means a lot because it's coming from guys that know how hard the game is and know how hard the position is. So that, no, it definitely meant a lot to get those words from those guys.
Yeah. Now, as you sort of have had a couple of days to think about it, what would you say Sunday was like for you?
Man, it's honestly nothing I can compare it to. You know, it's honestly a dream come true. It's, you know, you say that you want these things to happen. You're growing up, and, you know, this one of the things that I can mark off my list. And, you know, I'm just ready to get back to football now.
So I'll read you what DeMario Davis said about you on Twitter, and I'd love to hear your reaction. A lot of respect for this guy. He handled this situation like a real pro. I can only imagine the range of emotions and the mental download he went through in 24 hours. Salute. So here's an all-pro linebacker in the NFL saying this about you. What, when you hear that, what do you think?
No, I'm just, you know, I'm super appreciative that, you know, he even took the time to speak out and, you know, show that support. You know, it's great that those guys understand the, you know, what was what I was doing, and you know, even though it's a tough game, to still show support, you know, super appreciative.
Anything stand out after the game that any of your coaches said to you?
Well, I actually spoke to you know, John Elway for a bit after the game, and you know, he told me, you know, great effort. You know, he appreciates you know, what I did for the team, and yeah, it was. I mean, that was the first time I really got to, you know, have a one-on-one with Elway, so that was, you know, that was a cool experience as well.
Two other things. So, when you're a kid growing up, were you the kind of kid who dreamed of the NFL at an early age, or did you not really dream of it until you got to college, let's say?
No, I had NFL dreams since, you know, since I put on the first helmet.
What was your team growing up?
New York Giants. Yeah, back when they had Tiki Barber. Yeah, that was my squad. And, you know, it's been all over the place since then.
Yeah. So now that you have played a game at quarterback in the NFL, what is your NFL goal from here?
Yeah, so I, you know, I'm just looking to, you know, get back that out there on that field, and you know, whatever position that it's in, you know, whether it be special teams or offense. So now I'm just, you know, working to get back out there and show what I can do and show what I'm here for.
You don't want to be a one hit wonder, do you?
Not at all. Not at all.
I guess the last question I had, now, when I was watching you during the game, you know, wondering what kind of goes through your mind, I wonder now, when you look back at this day, are you going to look back at it as a positive experience because you got to play quarterback in the NFL, or are you going to look at it like a negative experience because you went 1-for-9, your team got killed? I mean, how are you going to look at this experience in retrospect?
No, this is definitely a positive experience. I, you know, it's nothing negative to say. I, you know, of course, I didn't play as well as I wanted to. You know, the team, we didn't play as well as we wanted to as a team. But you know, something I believe is that things happen for a reason. There's a reason I was there. There's a reason I got that opportunity. And, you know, we're just going to learn from it. And, you know, that's all we can take. So, no, I think every experience is, you know, you can definitely look at it from a positive attitude.
Kendall Hinton, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. And you've had an experience that the vast majority of American males wish they could have, which is to play quarterback in an NFL game. And you live to tell about it. So that's pretty cool.
I appreciate it, Peter.
Hey, all the best to you and good luck.
All right, thank you.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Have a good one.
You know, Raheem Morris had a prior coaching stint in the NFL in Tampa Bay. It did not go well. His second time around, he's taken a lot of lessons from that first time. In his first six games with the Atlanta Falcons, he's 4-2, including a 43-6 rout of the Las Vegas Raiders on Sunday in Atlanta. A little bit tougher task, I would think, a rivalry game against the Saints on Sunday. And look, he knows, Raheem Morris knows, that if he wants to win this job, if he wants any chance to have this job permanently, he's going to have to win games like this. And, you know, they've got a very tough schedule down the stretch. But now we'll hear from Raheem Morris, the interim coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Back on the podcast, so happy to be joined by Raheem Morris, the interim head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. He, of course, aiming to take away that interim tag. Raheem, you know, just before we started, we were talking about something that I have found to be so present among really good coaches in the NFL, and that is that old saying from Chuck Knoll, the only game that matters is the next game, or this week's game is the most important game. Is that the approach you take now that, I mean, everybody's asking you the question, hey, you're going to get the full-time gig?
You know, just throughout the weeks and how as they've been going, we've just been taking the 1-0 mentality, you know, for our team, for our guys, for everybody. You know, you can't worry about things that you can't control. You know, the things that you can control is how you go about every single game and how you attack the game and how you try to dictate terms and how you're trying to win each game. And that's just the approach that we've been taking.
Raheem, tell me a little bit about the team that you inherited. I know that one of the things that really surprised me when you took over this team was, so they fired the coach and general manager. You guys had a COVID thing that week, so I think you only got one practice in that week. And then you get on a plane and you go to Minnesota and you manhandle the Vikings. Take me back to that week. And let's just go over, how'd you find out you had this job? And tell me how your approach was that first week.
You know, it was a difficult situation. You know, obviously being one of my better friends in life and Dan Quinn being fired, somebody that I respect so much in football in general, as well as life. But it didn't happen. And he handed over the reins to me in a team meeting on a Monday, talking to the football team. His last conversation that he had with the whole team, he was able to hand it over and pass it off to me. And I simply told those guys the truth. You know, it's not like we had a culture problem. We didn't have an issue with a problem locker room. We had a winning problem. And we failed Dan Quinn, in my opinion. And I just felt that way. And I was honest with the guys, and I told them that. You know, and I got them ready for our next meeting that we had, which was on Wednesday. You know, the guys all came in live. We were able to do it in our indoor facility. And I simply laid out what our plan was going to be moving forward. And it was the only thing I could do was revert back to some of the lessons that I learned from some of the former coaches that I've been able to deal with in my life, like a Mike Tomlin, like a Monty Kiffin, like a John Gruden. And the only way we knew how to win when we were in Tampa together was force our will on our opponent. And I told those guys that our jobs were simple. We had to go out and score and try to get the ball back on offense and defense and special team included. And I wanted to make the messaging simple. And I want those guys to have something that they can focus on in order to go out there and try to get a win. You know, like you just mentioned, the next day, you know, going out and we try to have a really good practice that Wednesday. The next day we go out and it's Thursday and you have a COVID issue and you have to close down the building. So you get the one practice on Wednesday, you get the Thursday of virtual meetings, you come back on Friday, you try to double down the day and get a little bit of both. You get a little bit of that Friday and you go out and you play a tough team in Minnesota who you know is going to be physical, you know, to be well coached, you know, going to do the right things. And we're fortunate enough to get a win. And I think the guys started to feel what winning felt like and they got comfortable with it and they wanted to do it more. And so the messaging just got more simple and you start to add things to your messaging as the week go on and you try to find ways and more ways for your team to find a way to get a win every single week.
What do you recall about sort of the mentality of your team that first week you take over? You're 0-5, the two guys who run the team get fired. What happened when you looked your team in the eye that week? What did you see?
You know, I wanted to get the guys together and I wanted to get different groups together that hadn't been together as much. You know, sometimes I wanted to get the corners and the tackles together. I wanted to get a bunch of my guys that were running hit type players. I wanted to get a couple of the leaders together. I wanted to get a couple of the guys like the Mike linebacker and the quarterbacks together. You had to get the different groups that talk to the team and the different groups that are able to affect the team. And I wanted to be able to talk to those guys and want to tell them what I expected and what I was looking for and how we're going to move forward. And we're able to do those things and have those communications with people and put all those people on the same page. We got on one accord, so to speak. But I wanted those guys to know what the meshing was going to be and how I wanted them to proceed moving forward. And they absolutely followed it to a T, and they absolutely bought into the message, and we were able to go out there. I told them how we wanted to practice the look. I wanted to look more physical. I wanted to look more fast. And we knew that we had the opportunity to be able to do those things. We've seen it before in the past, and we have won before. And we knew what it wanted to look like. We wanted to get that thing across our team to make everybody feel important, to make everybody feel a sense of urgency that it's time to go. And I felt like the guys really responded well. We went out there, we performed well, and then we kept it going, and we've been able to keep it going since.
Would you say that sometimes, as long as you've been in the NFL, sometimes you sort of look at a team and you say, that's not an 0-5 team? When you took over your team, did that thought go through your mind?
Absolutely. You know, I never felt we were an 0-5 team when we started. You know, we had the bad results. We had some bad luck. We had some bad things happen to us as far as individual accolades and some of the things that happened situationally. But I never felt we were an 0-5 team. I always felt we had enough talent. I always felt we had the guys. I felt we had the 1-2. I felt we had the quarterback. I felt we had the guys that can go out there and get wins. And now that they have an opportunity to be able to show a little bit of that, we've been able to go out and get a couple wins. We've been able to go out there and learn some lessons. We've been able to go out there and learn some hard lessons. But I think these guys here, they know how to win. They want to win, and they definitely want to do it for the city of Atlanta.
As well as things have gone, I wonder, when you took this team over and after you win that game, basically, I thought it was really interesting when I watched your team play. It really was, it seemed to me, kind of a fiercer defensive team. Okay, and I think that showed a lot with the game against the Raiders this past weekend. But what did you see and what did you try to get across to your defense? You know, a unit that obviously you know so well.
You know, like I talked about, when I got those different sets of groupings together, the run and hit group, I thought was really important for us to bring back. You know, I felt it was really important for us to talk about our hustle and that being a big part of what we wanted to do moving forward. We had to get our guys to run to the football and absolutely hit. And I felt like we had to get the group of leaders to be able to lead that in practice so we can have that type of mentality in practice and play that way. And I felt like it showed up big time in that first game, and it's continued to show up throughout. You know, this week in particular, it showed up in a big way.
The second game that that you coached against the Detroit Lions, that game probably has got to be memorable to you because of some frustrating moments, particularly the Todd Gurley moment late. And I wonder, when you look back at that game, 23-22, a loss to Detroit, that you certainly had a good opportunity to win. What do you think?
You know, obviously you start with yourself first. And I told Todd I shouldn't have put him in that situation. I should have taken the knee with Matt, kicked the field goal, and got out of there. But even if Todd made the one mistake, we got to find a way to be better on defense and get that ball back. And good teams finish off good games, and we needed to finish off that good game. But it all starts with me. It started with me first, taking accountability, letting my team know, letting those guys know, and absolutely moving forward from there.
Have you had the impression so far with this team, because you have coached on both sides of the ball, okay, do you think that helped you, first of all, in getting a hold of your team and in getting them basically back to the team that you thought it should be when you took over?
You know, Peter, you know, having the ability to be on both sides of the ball has really helped with the communication just throughout the whole team. When you're able to talk to the quarterback, the offensive coordinator, the defensive players, your special teams coordinator, your special teams players, and you're able to set the game plan up in the light that you see in your vision, and you're able to communicate on everybody's language on a different level, I really think it helped. You just control the football team. So that communication, that experience has without a doubt helped me tremendously. And it's been something that I've learned from over the last couple of years. It's been great for me.
There's something about your game against the Raiders that I really found interesting, and that is this. The first possession of the game for the Raiders, you guys punt the ball back to them. I'm watching this. And on the first snap, you get an offside against you guys. So now it's first and five for the Raiders. They complete a short pass on first down, a short pass on second down. Short pass on second down, short pass on third down. So now it's fourth and one from their 45. And they choose to go for it. Okay. And Josh Jacobs, who's been, you know, along with Dalvin Cook and Derrick Henry, just about as hot as any back in football, you know, over the last month or so. He basically gets stuffed. I think Deion Jones, it was a group of guys, but that to me was a gigantic series for you guys. The Raiders come in, they're within a whisper of sweeping the Chiefs this year. Take me into that game and that moment and what you think that meant.
I think you hit it right in the head. I think it's about being in that moment in that time. You know, they had the ball, they had the momentum, they got a fourth and one opportunity, a chance to really keep the drive going. And we had talked about, you know, talking about keys to the game. And I talked to our guys about third down stops and not letting these guys to have possessions throughout the game and control it that way would be huge for us. So that first drive, them going for it on fourth and one, and Deion Jones absolutely flying over the top, you know, putting his chest and running and hitting like we talked about, putting it right on Jacobs and getting everybody to rally to the football and knock him back and not let him get that first down was huge. That was a big point in the game. It was a big point in our development, and it was a big growth in our defense. And when that happened, the guys were all able to go to the sideline, and that whole week we had to focus on resetting. And they all said to themselves, reset. And they all went out there and they played the rest of the game. And every time they came off the field, they had ability to reset. And I believe that's really why they played as well as they did.
You know, when the game was over, I was in and out of a bunch of games on Sunday. But when the game was over, I called up your stats. And here was the most impressive thing. That this offense that I consider to be a top 10 NFL offense for sure, explosive offense, has 14 series in that game. And they score zero touchdowns. Now, I realize you have to be, well, we got to focus on the next one and all that. But that was a tremendous performance by your team. What'd you say to your team after the game?
You know, I really, really am proud of the coaching staff. I'm really proud of the guys that execute the game plan. And I was really proud of everybody on the team. You know, if you could see the support from the sidelines, from Matt Ryan, from Julio Jones, who was not even playing, from all those type of guys and recognizing some of the things that their guys were out there doing for the team, I thought that was really important. I think when you get that kind of support and that kind of togetherness, I think that's what makes teams become really special. And that was a moment that you can look back on at some point, hopefully, and say it was one of the special moments in the Atlanta Falcons history, in the Atlanta Falcons moment that we're having right now. You got to live these moments one time at a time. You can't look past them, man. But that was certainly one that I remember for a long time.
You know, the other thing I was going to ask you, you just mentioned that Julio Jones doesn't play. You beat the Las Vegas Raiders 43-6, and Julio Jones does not play in the game. I mean, you always think that, oh, boy, we're going to be missing X, Y, and Z without Julio Jones. But it's really a mark of the guys who play behind him, I think. For you to have been that explosive in that game and to have won the game the way you did.
You know, big next man up philosophy here, you know, and the guys been able to step up. We've had guys go down all season. We have guys step up all over the place. Julio Jones is a hard guy to replace, and you're never going to replace him with one person. But we got guys like Alameda Zacchaeus. We had guys like Brandon Powell, Christian Blake, Ridley taking on a higher role. Russell Gage going out there doing more on whatever's required to win the football game. And when you have that type of mentality and that type of room, particularly in that receiver room being our bus drivers, I really felt was a big part of what we wanted to do and how we want to do it.
If and when you get to the point at the end of this season where you talk to teams about your case to be a head coach, how are you going to answer the question, how have you changed since you coached the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
You know, I was 32 years old. I was very young. I knew everything. Let me just tell you, Peter. Or at least I thought I did. But I've been so fortunate to be able to learn more, to grow, to develop, being around guys like Mike Shanahan, being around guys like Dan Quinn at a high level. Mike Shanahan and his work ethic and what he brings to the party and how disciplined and organized he can be. And Dan Quinn and how much he puts into it and how much he loves everybody around him and wants to develop every single person in that building and how much he wants to incorporate those things. Being around a guy like Jay Gruden, who absolutely knows how to be a gunslinger and worries about what he wants to do and how he wants to do it. And then I've been fortunate enough to grow up around John Gruden, have a friendship with Mike Tomlin that will never be lost, be around guys that I've seen do it coming up, and Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur, and being able to work with those guys and being able to deal with stuff that they deal with on a daily basis. It's just been a lot of fun for me, and a lot of growth and development over the last couple of years is going to help me moving forward. You know, but with all that being said, you got to stay in the moment. And right now we're in the 1-0 mentality moment, and that's our job, period.
One other question about the whole head coaching business. You know, as you watch the game right now, that you know this season started with only 3 African-American head coaches among the 32 in the NFL, 4 minority coaches in all. Obviously, the interim coaches have changed that. But I wonder, as you look at it, I've sensed over the years that there's become almost a certain desperation with a lot of minority coaches, that it's going to be very, very hard to get their shot. Do you have any sort of what I would call kind of magic pill to try to fix a situation that really has been, you know, has gone south in the NFL?
You know, there's no magic pill. For me, I was one of the fortunate people to have an opportunity to be in head coach in this league at a very young age. And I just believe that if you be your best self, those things will happen. And I'm just simply right now just trying to be my best self and put my best foot forward at all times. You know, there's definitely a problem in the NFL with minority hires or whatever the case may be, for sure. Is it a sad thing? No doubt. But I would hate to be hired just because I was minority. I want to be hired because I'm the best guy available and the best guy for the job. And that's the simple, that's the only thing you can ask for. That's the only thing that you want, is those type of opportunities and those type of forefronts to be able to be in front of.
In some of the changes that have been made this year, having teams interview at least 2 minorities, having coordinator jobs be open up to the Rooney Rule, do you sense that things are going to be any different this year?
You know, I really believe that is just a great effort that everybody's putting forth, and some real thought and some real movement and some real moving the chains, so to speak, in the right direction. You know, and you got to get all those things done just to give people opportunities to speak and be able to be in front of different people and to be in these different forums. I do believe the people that deserve those jobs, they'll rise to the top, and like they always do, and things will work themselves out. We just got to get in position to present ourselves and put in position to be in those spots, and we'll find out and see who's ready to do it.
One other thing just about your career right now, it just seems to me that the fact that now recently you have been at a high level on both sides of the ball with the Falcons, you know, both on defense and offense, and now having the opportunity to be the interim head coach, the experience you're getting there seems to me to be invaluable.
You know, certainly great experience. But the thing that I most am appreciative of being here in Atlanta is the support that I'm getting from the highest level to the lowest level, from ownership to everybody in the building. I mean, everybody is supportive. Everybody's willing to help. Rich McKay has been phenomenal. The support that I'm getting from the personnel side, the support that I'm getting from the coaching side, and just everybody involved with what we're trying to do. Everybody has one singular focus right now, and it looks like and it feels like it's trying to win. And that's what we want to try to do as a coaching staff, and myself included, going out there and trying to win.
You at all surprised you're 4-2 after this team started 0-5?
You know, you should never be surprised when you put the work in. You should never feel bad about the result when you're proud of what you've been able to do. So I'm proud of the guys and what they've been able to do and looking forward to doing more.
One other thing about your season. I don't know any team that's got as tough a home stretch as you do. I know you are in the one week at a time mentality, but you got to face the Saints this week. And then you got Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. Tom Brady twice and Mahomes once in the last 3 weeks of the season. So I'll tell you what, your team is really going to be tested down the stretch. You are going to be tested down the stretch.
Peter, you can't ask to be in those moments and not want them. You got to relish the opportunities. You know, don't ride the emotional roller coaster. Go out there and force your will on your opponent. Do your job, score and get the ball back. Let it play where it plays.
Two other things. Do you believe that the way this league is set up right now with COVID and the way it's been handled, how much of a distraction has it been for your team? Has it been really tough to handle? Or do you have to have this attitude that, hey, we just got to keep going?
You know, I think you're putting his leadership positions for a reason. You're putting him in the lead. You know, these crisis management moments and what's going on with the world. We're all fortunate to play football, and people want to see us get the Sundays. You know, part of my job right now is finding a way to keep your team safe, getting the Sundays so we can play this beautiful game that we all love.
It's amazing. You think, okay, if you ever get the job, chance to be a head coach again, you know, the offense and defense and special teams are important. The team chemistry is important. But maybe the most important thing is to make sure your guys don't get this disease that's killed 270,000 people. I mean, you didn't exactly go to coaching school to be able to survive COVID-19. What has that all been like for you?
You know, it's just certainly a part of it, man. Leaders are put in position to lead. And our job is to give the guys information, do our best to educate them, do our best to let them know what the best practices are and how you want to do it. Definitely abide by all the rules. Go and do it the right way. Get this Sunday. Play our games. Play this game for our season, our fans. Play this game for everybody that's involved. And play this game for you, because we all want to play it. And it's just so much fun to go out there and be able to accomplish those things. And we're just enjoying it, man. You gotta relish the moment. You gotta relish those opportunities, and we got it right in front of us. And if we can just do things the right way, we can get through this thing together.
And we'll end with this. Have you heard anything from your owner, Arthur Blank, about the future of Raheem Morris beyond this year?
You know, I just mentioned it to you, and what I talked about was the support that I'm getting from those guys. They don't owe me anything. These guys don't owe me nothing from what they're doing for me right now. From a winning standpoint, from a support standpoint, from whatever I need standpoint, they've been giving it to me, and I'm fired up about that. And when that time comes, we'll certainly talk about those things. I'm sure you'll hear about it before I do. But right now, my job is to just go 1-0 and live in that moment, man, and just enjoy it and relish this opportunity.
All you got to do is go out and beat the Saints this weekend. That shouldn't be too hard.
That's it.
Hey, listen, Raheem Morris, interim coach at the Atlanta Falcons. Thanks so much for joining me, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you, Peter.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
My thanks to Kendall Hinton of the Denver Broncos, Raheem Morris of the Atlanta Falcons for their time enlightening on both counts. So One thing that I wanted to remind you to try to do in this week and in every week, Chris Sims has what I would call a very irreverent podcast style. And he'll burn a bridge or two or maybe nine in his podcast. But what I like about him, they're always honest and they always tell exactly how he feels, which I think is why he is good at this side of the football business. He had the side as a quarterback, and now I think he's doing a great job. If you have a chance this week, please listen to his What the Bleep Happened podcast, only it isn't bleep. What happened in these games podcast. He does a great job of cutting through the muck and mire and telling you exactly why what happened really happened. So that's it for this week's podcast. Maybe next week will be slightly more normal. I don't know. We shall see. But thanks so much for joining me. Enjoy the games this week, including the last game of week 12.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.